So, Namaste, welcome to this third Q&A session for the Dissolving the Ego course. And it always astonishes me how quick these weeks go, how it's kind of a bit of a roller coaster, full on 4 weeks. But after the course is officially over, that's when the kind of real learning begins, the slow and gentle assimilation of the material by exposing yourself to it again and again, listening, watching again and again, just gently, not trying hard. So if you're finding it's going really fast and there's a lot coming at you, once the four formal weeks are over, you can take your time. What I suggest is just starting again. After it's finished, start again with lesson one. Spend a week just chilling out, absorbing that, and at your own pace completely, and maybe go around again, because you'll get more out of it each time you watch or listen to something. And when we begin to understand the lessons, we're listening, we're watching and listening through our beliefs. So we won't hear everything that is said, and we won't understand everything as deep as we can. So each time, through no fault of our own, of course, you can't really hear someone tell you you're already perfect if you're feeling deeply unworthy or something like that, or that you're completely safe, if the underlying assumption is that that's not true still. So my advice would be just to listen again, watch again, and not trying hard to get it or understand it, just listening and see what happens. You'll deepen each time, you'll have new insights and epiphanies, clearer seeings, and that's endless. So, you know, that's a fun journey if you relax into it. A journey from nowhere to nowhere, or from here to here, where you already are, but with a clearer seeing of where here is and what here is each and every time. So without any further ado, I'd like to invite Natasha to begin reading what's been sent in this week. Thank you, Natasha.
While I was contemplating on the question, will this awareness exist without this body? The mind sent me a thought, no. Because this is your feeling and not awareness. Feelings don't have any forms and boundaries, and you are accepting your feelings for awareness. When your body ceases to exist, your feelings or awareness will cease to exist as well. I don't know the answer to this. Please, dear Helen, help me.
Mind loves to give us these interesting conundrums, doesn't it, like this? And I can really understand this because I struggled with something very similar. When I began to be aware of awareness or listen to the silence, this was my favorite way to tune in. I noticed that listening to the silence seemed to feel a certain way. And I had to really look at that, because it was seeming to come with this feeling, like awareness was, or silence was and is, I not a phenomenon, it's the noumenon, but it also seemed to have this felt sense in the body that came with it. And I had to really look at that. Awareness itself isn't a feeling. It doesn't feel like anything. If we just ask the question now, am I aware? Is there awareness here right now? That awareness that you recognize, it doesn't have any feeling to it. But the longer you keep attention on that feeling, on that awareness, excuse me, the more the feeling will change in the body, the more pleasant the experience will be in the body. And vice versa, the longer we keep attention on thoughts, the more unpleasant the experience will be in the body. So awareness isn't a feeling, but it may come with sensations that become familiar and associated with it. So for me, silence came with this deep sense of rest, feeling of peace, quietness, a soft, like, field or a mushy cloud-like something that just descended upon the body, seemingly. You know, some kind of very subtle, but also still a phenomenon. So feeling is a phenomenon. It does have a boundary and a form. You can only feel it in your body at that particular time. You can't feel it outside of your body. So it's has a shape and a confined appearance, a limited expression, a subtle phenomenon, but nonetheless a subtle object phenomenon, because you can't feel a feeling when you're in deep sleep. Can you feel a feeling without a human body to feel it in? So it's just being clear, the awareness remains when the body's gone, but the feeling will not. So the feeling needs the waking state to be felt. The reason we get confused is because quite often we don't really pay attention to the fact that the feeling or any sensation, any emotion, any experience we have, any thought, any emotion, any experience, any sensation in the body at all is accompanied by awareness. And you wouldn't even know that thought or feeling or experience is happening if it wasn't for the awareness that was already there watching. The awareness is continuously watching. Sometimes there's something passing in front of it for it to watch. It watches this thought or this sensation. So we start to kind of associate the two together in duality, that the awareness and the feeling should be there together and can't be separate, really, can't be. You can't have a feeling without the awareness of it. You can't have anything. You can't have anything, any phenomenon without the awareness there first to recognize it. And the awareness is the infinite space, the contextual field in which the feeling and the body and the thought about the feeling all are showing up. And then it gets a little simpler, but more complex to the mind as we go into lesson four on Sunday, that awareness and the feeling are really the same thing. That you can show up in your unmanifest form, formlessness, as awareness, which is not a thing. You can't grasp it. We proved on Sunday over and over again that we're not using our senses to perceive awareness. It's not something in its unmanifest form. We know it's here, but you can't see it, touch it, taste it, or smell it. When it shows up as a form, either a subtle inner form of a thought or an experience, an emotion, sensation, or a tangible gross form like a sofa or a house or a human body, then you can perceive those with your senses. In lesson four, we're going to go into that. Ultimately, they are one and the same thing, and that's why awareness and the feeling can't show up separately. Awareness can exist without any phenomena at all. The noumenon does not need to show up as shapes and forms, but it enjoys doing that, continuously does that. So for now, just feeling out from the answer which stage of the answer you feel most comfortable with, to say that awareness is not a feeling. It's doesn't have any sensation to it. It isn't anything that the senses can perceive. And the second kind of stage of the answer is it is the same thing anyway. Awareness must be present with the feeling and before the feeling. And then the final stage of the answer, which all seem to contradict each other, I'm aware of that as I'm saying it, but not trying to figure this out, just gently listening, is that they're one and the same thing. Just as ice can show up as liquid water running out the tap, or it can show up as steam, water vapor in the air. Invisible right now is water vapor. It's there, H2O molecules. It can show up three different ways: ice, steam, and liquid water. Same molecules, just same thing showing up three different ways. The awareness can show up as awareness, or it can show up as a form. And just feeling into those, I'm going to say stages of the answer, three different stages, but they're not really. If you follow any one of those, it'll take you into the absolute understanding that there is only awareness and all the ways it's disguising itself as a thought, as an emotion, as a plant, as a sofa, as a human being, as a planet, as a galaxy, and so on. So I hope that helps. The effect of such an answer is going to bring probably more confusion to the mind. So rather than trying to figure out what I've just said, maybe just feeling your way through the answer, which bit of that kind of grabbed my attention, just gently curious about that bit. you know, not trying to work too hard. Mine says, how can all of those be true? It depends who we think we are when we're looking and where we're looking from, where we think we're looking from. So one of those yes and no answers that was very frustrating for me on the path, but eventually becomes a deep joy of a paradox. You're so amazing. You can show up as awareness. You can show up as form. And then you can realize that they're both the same thing. So you're pretty awesome. Thanks, Natasha.
Whenever I ask you a question, afterwards I'm in an expanded state of consciousness, which lasts for several days. In this state, I'm not triggered by anything, and there is a constant state of peace. But after several days, it fades, and I'm back to my normal state where I feel hurt by what people say to me.
So here is the usual pattern of the seeker, the egoic sense of self, the separate sense of self, the mind. It finds itself in pain, spiritual, emotional, sometimes even physical, definitely mental pain. And at that point, it's driven to be open, to see something anew, a different way, to have some insight, some epiphany, whatever it takes to stop suffering. And in that moment of openness, curiosity, where we find that we're either in meditation, contemplation, self-inquiry, or we just deeply want out of where we are, so much so that we're willing to question anything in that moment. We're willing to not hold on to anything. So usually we ask questions from that place where we, at least at first on the pathway, we ask questions from that place of, I'm really, really suffering and I really would like this to stop. And then naturally over time, a maturity arises, not that we're immature at first, just that perhaps a more effective way of functioning begins to come to the surface where it's clearer that I ask a question, I get an answer, I have some epiphany, and then I begin to hold on to that epiphany, that understanding, what I've just realized about myself, about the self, what I've just seen to be true. Something within me wants to take that and say, that's the final answer. That's the absolute truth. But however we experience the truth today, right now, wherever our current level of understanding is, whatever our latest epiphany is, our little aha moment, then it's going to be different and deeper tomorrow. It's going to be more powerful, more clear, even more obviously true, and that never stops. So the epiphany I had this morning when I was sitting with my big cup of tea, I can't even remember what that was, but it was enjoyable, whatever it was. I wrote about it in my journal, and but it's not held on to anymore. There was a period where whenever I'd have an epiphany, I would be certain that I had reached awakening. This is it now. This is so clear, so true. This must be it. And whenever you have a seeing of truth, it comes with that absolute certainty and clarity, doesn't it? That that's obviously true. And it is. But truth is so infinite that it can continue to reveal itself in and through and as you, as deeper and deeper seeings, every day for the rest of forever. So every day for the rest of this body's lifetime, I'll be having deeper and deeper insights. And then I won't have to go back into amnesia because I realize the truth deep enough that it's not going to be forgotten. It's been seen to not be a remembering and a forgotten, forgetting thing. And next body comes if I choose it. And it's just a continuation of a deepening of an endless journey. When it's endless, when it's infinite, then we're not looking for some end point. And we're not buying it so much when mind says this is the final resting place of my journey. Here lies the death, you know, this is the death of this part of my journey where I'm there now, I've arrived and that's it. So the beginning, the end of suffering is the beginning of a discovery and exploration that goes on forever. In fact, it's been going on forever, but we haven't really seen that. We've been driven by suffering, and that's natural, of course, we all are. until we're not, until we're driven by curiosity, an urge to discover, an urge to see yet another facet of this infinitely faceted jewel that is our real nature. And I could keep looking forever at it. From all these human bodies I'm showing up in, I could experience myself as a cat and a plant and a cloud and a tree and a human being infinitely. And that those experiences will always be deepening, always. And especially, or never more so as a human being, when it can consciously inquire into its own nature. Where did I come from? What am I? What is all this? So this is all to say, really, that there isn't an end to that journey, and the closing up, the assumption that this is the end of that journey, or that the journey is the destination, the lack of holding on to anything in particular, any insight, no matter how amazing, and there will be more and more amazing, each one, more amazing and yet more obvious and simple and duh, you know, in the end, it's like, well, of course, I'm not separate to anything. How could I be? That was amazing the first time you see it, like, wow, mind-blowing, cut. Can't get over it for quite some time. And then it's clearer, but more obvious and less kind of game-changing, just, oh, that's how it's always been. I'm just seeing how it's always been. And then at some point you just relax into that deepest thing. The next epiphany you have will be even more amazing than last, and the one after that will be even more amazing after that. They'll all be about the same thing, but they'll be from a different angle, like looking at it this way and then this way and this way. And I might feel like I'm having an insight about awareness. Next time it might be about the stillness of the self, how it's never moved, or how it's everywhere, or how it's not doing anything, or how it's doing everything. And it's all the same thing, and it's just revealing itself gradually over time for the fun, for the joy of it, maybe, when you relax into that. So we're suffering when we're closed and we think we know something. And we're experiencing liberation, freedom, when we don't know anything. And whenever we close up again and feel that constriction, that suffering starts again, is because we picked up some idea, as simple as that. What do I think I know right now? And how much fun is it to just discard that again? It's given me everything. Not discard it as in it's wrong. It's just, I've played with this toy for a while. I've had fun with it. Now I'm going to just gently put it down and wait for the next one. And as I'm just enjoying these infinite Christmas mornings where every present gets better than the previous one. I don't know what it is, but you know it's going to be better than last time. Not the last time was anything less than ground-shakingly amazing. You get the sense of it, right? Very simply, like became clear to me that when I thought I knew something, even when I thought I knew what the self was, what I was, even to know that eventually becomes suffering, doesn't it? Anytime I've ever suffered anywhere, ever, it's because I thought I knew something. I was sure of it. And the moment I'm not sure of anything, I'm willing to question again. I'll start to feel my body relax and the emotional pain will disappear. My mind will begin to quieten down. And the awakened state presents itself again. Not that it went anywhere. It's just clouded over by this temporary insanity of thinking that we know something. And if you are the infinite mystery of the unmanifest self, the supreme being, you can't really know that conclusively, can you? Ever. You can't really know the invisible, the formless, the mysterious, the beautiful mystery that is you. You can't even really know its form, its appearance. It's appearing right now as this universe. You are appearing as this universe. And in the very next instant, it's going to change. Like cells are being born and dying in your body, thoughts coming and going. Cars are passing by, the plants in the house are growing, little tiny bits of bricks are falling off the buildings, sand's moving on a beach. It's all changing constantly. The clouds are moving. You can't really know it that way either. You can only really know this is what it is right now. This is what's appearing as right now. So if you kind of really ponder on that for a while, you just relax into it and have begin to really enjoy it. And you, most of all, you stop trying to get somewhere to some final epiphany that's the one to end all epiphanies, you know, where after that you're no longer curious or need to do anything. You kind of might end up doing, ironically, more spiritual practice after that, but because it's driven by joy and fun and a sense of being like a three-year-old inside, just wanting to deeply discover, oh, what's this, what's that, what's this, what's life like from here, you know, what's it like to not know anything as I move about my life. And with the background understanding of what you really are, not being able to hold on to anything, you are the mystery. I'll try that one out and see what happens. Spend a bit of time on it, because we all do this, don't we? And because it's obvious as well, we would do that, because truth is, when we have an understanding or an insight, it's addictive, it's wonderful, it feels amazing, it feels open, it feels free. But why it feels free in epiphany, why it feels amazing, is because you're not holding on to anything in that moment. You're just open. Open to what we don't know. Nobody to be open, but there's just openness present. So you can make that your way of being. And then the insights will come so fast, they'll make your head spin. And you'll enjoy them, but you won't hold on to them. And you won't be trying to get this final destination that really doesn't exist. Thanks, Natasha.
Dear Helen, if I understood you right, you say that with an identity shift to the self, all karmic patterns will be gone and the outside will change instantly when the inside changes, because they are one. In my understanding, that also includes the body. Today I've had a huge aha moment, and now I know and feel that I never was separated in the past. A few moments later, a big doubt arose, which I questioned. Is it really true that the self does include the physical health of the body? It's nearly impossible for me to believe that I suddenly could stand up out of my wheelchair and move my arms and legs. Is this contemplation enough, or did I understand something completely wrong? Thanks a lot.
I think you're absolutely right on track there. Outside, including the physical health of the body, is outside for the sake of lesson two, isn't it? Physical health of the body is going to reflect how much life force we're allowing through it, based on how many thoughts we're believing. So how many thoughts we're believing is each thought we believe is diminishing the amount of life force that flows through the body and the mind, and we then experience as our life. And we could say wellness of the body is an abundance of life force energy, more than enough. And any illness, disease, or anything like that, any limitation of the body, can be seen as to be a reflection of not enough life force being allowed through. So it might be impossible for you to believe, as you've said, in certain things, and that's totally understandable. When we don't believe any thoughts at all, doesn't mean those thoughts have gone, which means we're seeing that those thoughts can't be true, because those thoughts are to do with, concerned with, stemming from the idea that we're a separate being. When we really get that, and we really understand that any thought that goes through my brain is based on the perspective of how it looks from this one body mind, even if I realize myself to be everywhere, that thought is only happening somewhere. So it can't be ultimately true. It's not wrong. It's just ultimately not the ultimate truth, basically. So one of the major thoughts that cuts off a lot of the most of the life force energy is this idea that we're a separate being. You cannot get more anti-reality thought than that, opposition of reality. Not that there is an anti or opposition, but for sake of explanation. And we come across these ideas of possible, impossible, probable, definite, certain. What we think is impossible really is something that we don't believe can happen based on our current and previous experience. And what we think is possible or definite or certain is usually what's happening right now. So we could take any set of circumstances for anyone, anywhere, and say, what do you think is the highest thing that you could experience? So whatever we think about, we can experience that as an outcome. And that's more and more likely to happen depending on how many thoughts we've released. So this is where miracles come from. A miracle is the natural state of a human being's experience. Abundance, miracles, same thing. The highest manifestation possible in any moment is what's already happening for us. And as we release holding on to ideas, then that highest thing that's possible is going to increase. What that is for you, I don't know. I don't know what healing of the physical body looks like for you. And neither do you, right? But you can notice that there must be some improvement possible, whatever that is. I don't know, again, what that looks like. That if I'm experiencing a diminishment of my life force energy based on the thoughts I have been believing, namely the biggest culprit of all is that I'm a separate being alone in the universe, cut off from everything else, everyone else separate too. Then as I start to see that that's not true, and the other biggie that we'll look at on Sunday, it's a form and formless of two different things, that my body is a body. It's made of flesh and blood and bones and all of that. That it's not actually, it's something separate to, it's something that's arisen out of the infinite silence of being. The formlessness, the form and formless are two different things. That's the other biggie that really costs us a lot of energy and life force. And we have to constantly sustain those beliefs by thinking about forms that we think are there. Then who knows what the outcome of that will be? It will be better. The one thing we can know is it will be better than it is right now. So even if that's only less pain, more energy, more vitality, more sense of well-being in the body, or it could be any other higher thing than that. I don't know what that is for you. Nobody does. But as you release those ideas that are in the way of that, most of all, this idea about what's impossible and possible. Possible is usually, when it comes to the body, usually what the doctors agree is possible. And the doctors are, of course, not wrong. They're just working from a limited paradigm based on previous experience with previous patients and based on the false idea that the body is a body and that it's subject to time and space and slow, gradual healing. What if those things aren't actually true? So what if it really isn't a body? What if it's emptiness? Is there a whole new set of possibilities that come into existence then as you realize that? Immediately, whatever we realize to true is going to reflect in the mirror image of the body, the mind, and our experience with that. What is impossible, again, is defined by a certain range. How we see the world as a separate being, we'll have a very clear picture of what we think is possible and impossible. As the self, not so much. We tend to hang out in the unknown as the noumenon, and to not really hold on to. What if impossible starts to move to possible? I've had things happen in my life that I never thought could occur. I was so arrogantly certain it was impossible because I tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to make it happen as a separate being and failed and failed and failed and failed, as I'm sure we all have, and then concluded that that was impossible. Not up here, just somewhere in my heart, there was a sense that this is just never going to happen. And as I really began to recognize that what's possible for me to experience in any moment, a range of the highest thing to the lowest thing I can experience in this moment is dependent on what filter of thoughts I'm forcing my reality to take the shape of, or the reality rather, then that whole range of possibilities goes up. The worst case scenario is suddenly not available anymore. And the best case scenario has jumped up. Again, I don't know what that looks like for you, but it's exciting to explore that inside our own consciousness. Because the word impossible actually really doesn't mean very much to the self, does it? When you think about it as the noumenon, as the infinite awareness, who knows what that is? But instead of this rigid set of possible and impossible, what if it's just always going to be going like this? You know, as you're deepening in what you're seeing, deepening in your understanding. So I hope that helps and gives you some room in your thoughts to kind of ponder a bit more about that. And as always, with any of these, with this one as well, if you want some more discussion around it, feel free to write back in with what comes out of what's been said, what you wrote and what I've said. So thank you.
Dear Helen, my gratitude for your work and teachings is endless. Your presence has helped me enormously with the deepening of my experience of the self. On the phenomenal level, I've experienced a repeated pattern of unsuccessful romantic relationships. The desire for a perfect life partner seems to be deeply rooted in my psyche. Simultaneously, a belief is present that it's not possible to achieve, and even if I have this type of relationship, it won't last. All likely are based on prior failures and perhaps my own parents' lack of relationship, harmony, or longevity. Most recently, this pattern has manifested again with a person with whom I've experienced the greatest love, connection, and trust. Presently, our relationship seems to be in a complex state and not where I would prefer it to be. At the same time, it feels that this person is the right one for me. I've tried contemplating on the question, is this true that I can't have what I want? The answer is clear. Of course, this isn't true. As a limitless being, I have everything. Nevertheless, I find myself again in a familiar place of discontentment and not getting what I deeply desire. Please, can you help me with the dissolving of this karmic pattern and finally allowing myself to experience the type of relationship that I desire? Much love and gratitude.
So I think we've all had several reruns of this one in our experience, haven't we, over and over again? And for me, when I looked at this particular issue, I had to really get to the roots of the desire. Do I? Because if I'm not clear about what I actually want, then I can't allow that. I'm not going to be able to allow that to myself to experience that. If I'm not, I can't hit a target that I don't know what it is. So first of all, have you been specific enough in what you actually want? And let's, in this example, you're talking about the right person. So the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with, grow old with, all of that. So have you been clear enough? What would that actually look like? You know, so I'm not asking you to describe the physical characteristics of that person or even the way they speak or look or anything, but what would it be like? How would you know when you'd achieved that? So there'll be some parts of your experience now with this being that you're experiencing this complexity with that match up with that, and some parts that don't. So maybe, and these are just some examples that came out of my own kind of deeper questioning, my own experience. I'd know when I had that, when I'd find myself laughing a lot more with that person, enjoying. I'd find myself feeling comfortable or at ease with that person. Or, you know, we could carry on that list, couldn't we? So first thing I'd ask you to do is to really look at that. How would you know? Because the first thing that we tend to do when it comes to desire is to not be specific enough because we don't feel we can have it. And as you're seeing, you're pushing through that belief, you're contemplating. So now maybe you can get a little bit more specific about what you want in terms of what would it look like? How would you know that this is it? You stop a moment and look at your life, your relationship with a being in your life and go, wow, this is what I was writing down. This is what I was journaling about. This is what I saw in my deepest desire. So how would you know? Because mind has a tendency to look at what is, what you're experiencing right now, and say, this is not it. And I know it sounds crazy, but you might actually be experiencing what you've been asking for and not notice. One of the hardest things for me about any desire was, first of all, to believe that I could have it, which you're already working on. Secondly, to be aware and awake enough in the present moment to actually recognize when it was here. And I know that sounds astounding that we could want something so much, a relationship, abundance, awakening, and not notice when it's here, because this seeking mechanism just keeps on moving right forward, moves the goalpost another 10 feet down the road, 10 meters down the road, whatever. And really, if we could just stop and look at what's going on right now without the filter of this forward movement, we might find we're experiencing more of that than we actually realize. So as you start to explain and describe to yourself what that would look like, you might have quite a few epiphanies just in that process itself. And then I'd also suggest looking at what you really want in terms of, do you really want a relationship like this? Or do you really want to feel how you'll feel when you have that relationship? So mind doesn't want to look at this again, because it says, if I admit that what I really want is to feel deep intimacy, trust, unconditional love, to feel complete acceptance, to feel valued, you know, whatever comes out of that question, how would I feel when I have this in my life? Mind says, if I think about that, I'm not going to get the person. I've got to pick one or the other. But actually, we're fine-tuning, sculpting what we're going to make it easier for this person to come into our life if they're not already there, might already be there. And so by looking at what we really want, because we have to get to the end point of that desire, what we actually really want first. And then this other person showing up in our life is going to be an outcome, a mirror reflection of that. If we go for the mirror image, we can't ever have it. This other being, other, is the mirror reflection of our own unconditional love and acceptance of ourself, my own body and mind. And I can look at that and love unconditionally. When I can look at the way I handle my relationships, my finances, my awakening, with only unconditional love and acceptance, then that's what I really want. That's what I really, really want underneath all of this. I want this other being because I think they're going to make me feel that way, and they can't. They can only slide into my experience when I'm already feeling that way to match up with that. Someone who's going to love me and accept me unconditionally can only do that when I'm starting to do that for myself. So what you really want more than anything is what, and it's why we want awakening, isn't it? Because we think it's going to give us those things too. So if you can be deeply honest about what we actually want, and then we can allow all the ways, not just this relationship, but all the ways that life is trying to give that to us. And there are a lot of ways. So this relationship, intimate relationship for one, a deep and profound awakening is two, rich, deep connections with friends, colleagues, co-workers, Sangha members, three. And those are just three ways. Deepening connections with your family members, on and on and on it goes. Fulfilling relationships with your pets and all of that. Most of us have got that one covered already, but you know, it can always get even more amazing. So getting really honest about what we want isn't going to make it not happen. It's actually going to allow it to happen. It's the only place. What do you really want? Why do you want this relationship? That question was very revealing for me, because I'll finally feel the way I want to feel. I had to look at why I wasn't feeling that way now. And then when I finally was able to allow that to come from the inside out, you know, everything began to change in my life. So that would be my experience. You just need to fine tune this now, right? You've got the idea, you've contemplating the limiting beliefs that are stopping it. But will you be that perfect partner for yourself first? Will you be your own biggest fan, your own biggest supporter first? And then everyone around you starts to magically mirror that back to you. And one of those ways can be an intimate romantic relationship if that's what you want. And of course you do. So have your cake and eat it. All the slices, every way it wants to show up. See what happens when you apply that. Deep down, the root of every desire, no matter what it is for a feeling. We want a feeling. We want to feel a certain way. And we'll believe that when we have, do, or become or experience this thing, that's when we'll feel that way. And it can only be a reflection, that experience, that thing that we have or become, whatever. It can only be a reflection of the fact we're already feeling that way. It can never make us feel, this is the cause and effect of lesson two. It can never cause us to feel a certain way. Thanks, Natasha.
Hi, Helen. I really valued the self-inquiry I did with you on Sunday. I've been trying to do it myself, but I can't seem to manage very well. I think this is because I don't really know what I'm doing, and also there's some resistance. Is there a list of questions I can use? What do you make of the resistance and how can I overcome it? Thanks.
So first thing I want to say is, who is this me that can't do it on their own? So was there an idea on Sunday? And of course there is for all of us at first, that I was helping you do the inquiry. My helping you has to be a reflection of how deeply into your own inquiry you already were. Otherwise, we could not have aligned in that conversation. So that's the first thing, just to question the reality of this one that can't do it. Having said that, I totally get it, as in inquiry for me was a complete mystery, did not work for me at all, thought it was a mental exercise. I first came across self-inquiry in a book 20 years before I started to really actually try to apply it. This weird, who am I question that Ramana asked. And I'm like, what a stupid question that is. I know who I am, right? I know who I am. Why would I even want to ask that? 10 years later, I saw Muji taking someone through self-inquiry and I'm thinking, this is all just a mental exercise. This isn't getting anyone anywhere. And in my arrogance, it took me another 10 years to really get to the understanding that it's not a mental exercise at all. It's just questioning. It's just a question. Any question, doesn't matter what the words are, but any question that comes from the heart, a deep curiosity, urgency, wonder, I would love to know more about reality, what I really am, is going to open that up. The questions we were using on Sunday were directed to counteract the assumptions that we have. So I assume I'm a separate being. So we look and see if that's true. Am I really, can I find a separate being? Where is it? It's always absent without leave, always, never there. So the other questions that we used were to also counteract the other assumptions. I assume that I'm listening to the silence through my ears. So when I actually question that, is that true? I find out actually it's not. Or I can't really see awareness with my eyes, my physical eyes. So I'm questioning, am I using my senses or my mind? Because those are the two major assumptions. I'm using my body and my mind to tune into the noumenon. Instead of the body and mind just kind of being there while the noumenon recognizes itself. The body and mind just hanging around there. And then it recognizes itself, which is what the questions we were looking at on Sunday were about. Overall, general questions that really helped me. The who am I question, I didn't really ever fully resonate with it. Nothing wrong with it. I know it's worked for a lot of beings. But who am I for me just seemed to always stimulate more thinking. A different time, maybe that question might have had a very different result for me. I don't know. What am I was powerful. It just came to me spontaneously. Perhaps the most powerful question that ever really shifted my life was, where am I? This assumption that I know where I am. I'm here in this location. Where the body is where I am. And where the body isn't, is where I am not. I know where I am, says the mind. If I ask you where you are, you probably point to your body, right? Or if I show a photograph of you and a group of friends and say, which one's you, you'd point to that particular body. Nothing wrong with that. That's what we all do. But can you feel this deeply held assumption that I know where I am? But if actually, if you're formless and infinite, do you really know where you are? This question for me, it was bigger than an atomic explosion. I just got more and more and more obsessed with it. And it came right off the back of, what am I? Like, if I don't know what I am, if I am this mystery, how can I possibly say where I am? And therefore, how can I say which is my body? How can I say which isn't my body? How can I say which are my thoughts and not my thoughts? How can I possibly, with any amount of certainty, be so sure that I know which my karmic patterns, which ones I've transcended? To do all of that, I have to zoom into one body mind and say, that's me. That's where I am, right there, that corner of time and space. And that's all I am. So there's a couple of questions there. Also, what is love? What is reality? Same. What is awareness? Where is silence? You know, you can get a sense of it, right? Whichever particular doorway from lesson one that you really enjoy. What is the presence? Where is it? You know, just kind of, you can feel these questions penetrate the core assumptions that we think we know. Even after we had deep seeing, even after I'd seen again and again and again that I was formless, still went back every time to this assumption that I know where I am. Every time. And I pick up some idea, some thought, like I was saying before, something I was really certain of, really certain. I know where I am. I know that I'm scared. This body's feeling fear. I know that I'm scared because I know I'm here. But can I still say that I'm scared if I don't know where I am? So just having a feel of those questions, what you're experiencing with self-inquiry is completely normal. Everybody feels confused. Everybody feels they can't do it. But what if it's just kind of like contemplation, just finding a question that resonates with you? The self-inquiry questions are just more general about the root of illusion, that we're a separate being, separate to everyone and everything else. Everyone and everything else is else or other than me. So you don't even have to really have a question. I just found a question was a good place to jump off from. And if you've had a seeing that fascinates you, then that I can't really... there's lots of things that came out of everyone that I was working with on Sunday, so I couldn't say in particular which one was yours, but they're all yours. but if there was something that we talked about in that particular inquiry that's like, wow, that's really interesting, then I would hang out there. I would really groove on that. I would want to see more of that. I was like, what's that like again? Let me see that again. Let me go deeper. And there is no right way to do self-inquiry. There isn't. Every time I do self-inquiry with someone or myself, it's always different. We could take the whole set of people we did it with on Sunday and do it again. It'd be completely different. Different questions would arise, different epiphanies, different experiences. Everything would have to be completely different. So rather than trying to get it right, which is something we kind of trained into, there's a right answer and I've got to find it, a right way to do it. How is it right now for you to self-inquire? Okay, right now when I inquire, there's confusion. Okay, that's your experience of it today, right now. It's okay, isn't it? What's it like a minute from now and an hour from now and then tomorrow? So just if there's a particular question and anyone's upset or something else that some other teacher or something suggested or somebody's mentioned to you that you really like, go with it. You really like it for a reason because it's resonating on a frequency that's going to open something up for you. Your body's telling you this is important for me to pay attention to right now. And just letting go, relaxing more into, you don't have to figure out the how of self-inquiry. Just the intention is enough because you are the infinite self. I would like to move deeper into inquiry. I'd like inquiry to be a more natural, spontaneous, effortless process for me. Just that intention is going to move mountains for you. And then don't try too hard. Go have a cup of tea or something. And you'll find, oh, this question keeps popping in my head or something like that. And it'll just start to deepen all by itself. all that's really happening here is you're becoming aware of the idea that you have to do inquiry, this idea. I'm the one that's got to figure it out and get it right. So in fact, the inquiry is already deepening just by this that you've sent in. Can you see that? It's moving into a more effortless, spontaneous thing anyway. Thanks, Natasha.
That's the last one.
Thank you.
I wonder how to get more energy to flow through this body. What question would help? For example, do I hold fear unconsciously? What do I need to do to remove blocks to energy? Thank you, Helen.
So good question. And thank you, Natasha, for reading so beautifully. I'll answer this one and we'll take a quick break. And if anyone has any questions, then sharings, we can have some time for that. So to remove energy blocks are really only where there's resistance in the energy system. The body is made of energy. Even before that, it is emptiness. And when it starts to vibrate into a form, appearance of a form, a body, it's vibrating at a particular level, like a frequency or a wave. And an energy block is where a faster moving frequency, which is higher frequency, is trying to move through a very slow. This is what resistance is. Resistance is, or blockage, is where we've habitually held certain thoughts about certain things, not about our body, it could be about anything. Life, reality, relationships, our job, our boss, our mother-in-law, money, awakening itself. And some newer influx of energy is trying to move through the body, down through the chakra system and out into and as our life. But it's trying to push its way down through this slower frequency. So it naturally slows down. And it's possible to hold on to thoughts that are so opposite to reality that it seems that the energy is not moving at all. And it's our experience just the same experience over and over again, which we call a karmic pattern. Because the frequency of the energy in our body is a metaphor, physical representation of reality as we see it. So if you took all of our beliefs and condensed them down, like into Play-Doh, squashed them down into the shape of a body, our body is made of these frequencies. And as we awaken to the truth, these higher, faster frequencies, which we might describe as peace, love, and joy, and all of that, are having to try to work their way through. And you can feel that very physically sometimes. Physical pain is the resistance manifesting where there's a really, really, really stubbornly held on to belief. Of course, we don't do that on purpose. It's just how we've always seen the world or ourselves or someone else. This is just how they are. This is what always happens to me, that kind of belief. Trying to this stronger frequency. It's like this fast flowing river. Because left alone, without any resistance, the life force would come down through the body and really fast, really high frequency, abundantly. And we wouldn't even feel it because there'd be nothing for it to catch on as it went through. You feel it. You can feel an ache in your shoulder or tension in the body. We can feel where this energy is kind of hitting this slower moving energy. So contemplation is a way then of actually examining this slower moving frequency or self-inquiry even too. And loosening it up, getting it to wriggle a bit faster until eventually it's all moving together. So you're not having this fast flowing river, this raging rapid, hitting this boulder, this big concrete stone, and the water smashes up against it. And this is what when we feel physical, emotional, mental pain. This is what's happening. Or some experience, you know, Groundhog Day in my life, just looking the same thing over and over again in the same area. So what's the fastest way to remove those blocks? Let go of knowing anything in this moment. A deep and abiding curiosity about reality. Deep, like really deep. Like I can never see it fully. And that's a wonderful thing because it's an endless. Today I go to Disneyland and it's the best experience I've ever had. And tomorrow when I go, they will have upgraded it completely. And it'd be even more amazing. And the day after that, complete upgrade. Maybe Disneyland's not the best example for spiritual seekers. Nirvana, you know, Nirvana land, whatever that would look like. Yeah, that's a weird image in my head now. But anyway, if you could imagine not knowing anything, the freedom of that, that's unimpeded life force. Don't make that a final destination, though. It'll be free-flowing, you'll be curious, you'll be open, then you'll pick something up, and you'll feel it slow down, you'll start to feel it in your body. Your body will tell you, hey, you've picked something up. I don't like that. So you let go. And then next time, it's a little bit longer before you pick something up, and you don't hold on to it for quite so long. You don't feel quite so terrible, and your body doesn't have to contract so much before you realize. And you're not looking for an end point. I'll be awakened when, you know, and I'm saying this because it's my definition of awakened. When I never pick up a thought ever again, that's when I'm awakened. And, you know, and that's an impossible thing, because you've picked up a thought right there, right? You've picked up a definition. I know what awakening is, and this is what it is. So a nice impossible thought loop that our mind has going on there, where we can never really experience freedom. So I hope that gives you something to work with. If you forget everything right now, drop everything. Don't know anything. Don't be sure of anything. Be willing to question anything. Even the assumptions that human beings think are absolutely ridiculous to not question. That this is a body. That this is what I think I'm seeing is what I'm actually seeing. How I see the world through my thoughts is reality. Those things that we never really question. The form and formless are two different things. So you don't have to know what those assumptions are, just the willingness, the intention to question anything that comes up in front of you. Free-flowing energy that feels so nice, as much as it can flow freely in this moment, right? No absolutes. So I hope that helps with that. Let me just stop this recording.